I'm Chris Kresser, and this is Revolution Health Radio. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Revolution Health Radio. I'm Chris Kresser. Today, we have a question from Kristen. Let's give it a listen. Hey everyone, if you're like most people I know, you don't have the time or the desire, training for that matter, to sift through the hundreds of medical studies that are published each month. But whether you're struggling with a chronic health problem or just want to maintain your health and live as long as possible, it's important to stay informed about the latest research and how it might affect your well-being. And let's face it, it's easy to get overwhelmed by all the conflicting stories in the media. You need a source of unbiased information that you can rely on. One that's easy to understand without too much jargon and full of practical tips that you can put into action. That's where my website, chriskresser.com, comes in. You'll find in-depth, evidence-based articles on a wide range of health and nutrition topics each week. You'll also find over 10 free ebooks on subjects like effortless weight loss, healing your gut, thyroid disorders, and natural skin care, as well as online classes and programs on optimizing nutrition for fertility and pregnancy and lowering your cholesterol without drugs. What you won't find is any third-party advertising, corporate influence, or hype-driven, headline-grabbing stories with a lot of drama but no substance. You just get the real inside scoop on the health issues that matter to you most. So head over to chriskresser.com and check it out. And when you sign up for my email newsletter, you'll get instant access to my award-winning 63-page ebook, 9 Steps to Perfect Health. It's like an instruction manual for preventing and reversing disease and living a long and healthy life. Okay, now back to the show.
Hi, Chris. My name is Kristen, and I have a question about medical marijuana. I know that it has a huge stigma attached to it, especially in the U.S., like in the southern parts of the U.S., but I know that in California it's legal, and I know in Denver it's legal, and so I was just kind of curious as to what your opinions were on it, and if you prescribe it to patients, or if you tend to steer away from that. Does it help or hinder autoimmune diseases? Does it help or hinder cardiovascular disease? I mean, those are all questions that I have, and just wanted to know if you had any kind of insight on that or just what your opinion was on it. Thanks.
Thanks for sending that question in, Kristen. This is a fascinating topic for me, and it's one I've done a lot of research on, and we have a growing body of experience with. Because I'm always interested in treatments that are effective but don't cause a lot of side effects and have a lot of long-term risks. So let's start by talking a little bit about some basics, differences between cannabis, CBD, and THC, which a lot of people aren't familiar with if they haven't really looked into this in any detail. Then we'll talk about why medical marijuana is a promising therapeutic application in medicine and for what conditions in particular that it's shown promise for. We'll talk a little bit about the legal and social environment and, you know, some of the challenges that provides. And then we'll talk more specifically about my experience in our experience at CCFM using these approaches. Okay, so the terms marijuana and cannabis both refer to any of the subspecies of the whole unprocessed cannabis sativa plant and its basic extracts. And within that, cannabidiol, or CBD, and delta-9 tetrahydrocannabidiol, or THC, are the chemical compounds that are found in cannabis that are of particular medical interest. Now, there are numerous other compounds within cannabis that are still being studied, and some of them have already been shown to have particular effects. But THC and CBD are definitely the ones that we know the most about and have been the most actively studied at this point. Now, this is really important to understand. THC is the psychoactive component of cannabis that's responsible for much of the high and, you know, the changes in perception that people feel when they consume cannabis products. CBD, on the other hand, is not psychoactive and does not produce the physiological responses or the characteristic high that THC does. And in fact, pure CBD is available over the counter for this reason, because if it doesn't have any THC in it, then it's not classified as a drug by the FDA. As you may know, cannabis as a whole and THC are classified as Schedule 1 substances. That means the FDA considers them to be, you know, more dangerous and harmful than a drug like heroin, which is kind of ridiculous, but that's the way it is right now. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a bit. So CBD and THC are the main compounds. THC is psychoactive. CBD is not psychoactive. Now, why does marijuana even have a medical use? I mean, for a long time, it was used recreationally, and there wasn't much knowledge of or interest in its medical uses. Certainly in some traditional medical systems, there was an understanding of that. But here in the West, it was thought to be mostly a recreational drug. Early on, it was discovered by cancer patients that cannabis could help with this nausea and other symptoms that people would go through when they were having chemotherapy. And patients were mostly just left to use it illegally if they wanted to use it for that purpose. But it really could have a game-changing effect in those situations. And people would have severe loss of appetite and nausea and just feel absolutely rotten most of the time. But cannabis would enable them to feel much better, not have the nausea, and actually eat and not lose as much weight, which are all very important things when you're dealing with cancer and when you're dealing with a treatment that has side effects that are this severe. Over time, as our understanding began to expand, we started to look at physiological mechanisms for these changes. And we know that the human brain contains endocannabinoid receptors, and cannabinoids can induce either an inhibitory or excitatory response from the affected neuron by acting on these receptors. And these receptors bind not only to the chemicals found in cannabis, but also endogenous compounds, which are compounds that we produce in our own body. So there are a lot of known functions of our body's own internal cannabinoids and endocannabinoid receptors that we can then study as possible therapeutic targets for medical cannabis. And these endocannabinoid receptors internally have been linked to the regulation of appetite, which again makes sense given what we just said. Anyone who's consumed cannabis knows that it can produce the munchies, and that's one of the reasons why these endocannabinoid receptors affect appetite. They affect pain management, neuroprotection, central regulation of motor function, sleep, regulation of nausea and vomiting. So again, that explains its effect with chemotherapy patients. Reward-driven neurocircuitry, intraocular pressure, memory, tumor growth, and gastrointestinal motility, to name a few. So for example, CBD and combination CBD and THC products have been used successfully in some patients with inflammatory bowel disease, and having multiple bowel movements a day can slow down motility and reduce inflammation in those cases. There's a specific type of endocannabinoid receptor called CB1. That's the one that's known to stimulate appetite and eating behaviors, and it's the one that's responsible for the munchies. It's also the reason that cannabis can be used medically to increase appetites in patients undergoing chemo, as we talked about, and also patients with AIDS and other conditions that reduce appetite. It's been studied as an appetite stimulant in age-induced anorexia, you know, low appetite in the elderly, which can become a pretty significant problem, and specifically those for Alzheimer's, because that disease can lead to low appetite or forgetting to eat. And there actually is some research suggesting that cannabinoids may be able to slow the disease process of Alzheimer's by preventing the inflammatory effects induced by beta amyloid deposition, which is a hallmark of that condition. Perhaps most interestingly, in terms of therapeutic application, endocannabinoid receptors have been shown to reduce pain from a wide variety of causes. And so, for example, we know that the analgesic effects of acetaminophen can be prevented by blocking specific cannabinoid receptors, which suggests that one of the pain-relieving mechanisms of acetaminophen involves cannabinoid receptors, and of course also suggests that cannabinoid receptors play a role in pain. And then cannabis extracts containing both THC alone and then combination of THC and CBD have been shown to be effective at reducing a number of chronic pain conditions, or pain from a number of chronic conditions, as well as neuropathic pain. For example, people with MS who use cannabis report a reduction in symptoms, including muscle spasticity, pain in the extremities, bowel dysfunction, walking, and balance issues. And this could be due to not only cannabis's role in controlling pain, but also its effects on motor function, motor control, and gastrointestinal motility. So let's talk a little bit about what the research has shows so far about the promise of medical cannabis. And keep in mind that it's quite amazing that the research we have already shows these impacts, because the ability to research cannabis has been extremely limited by its classification as a Schedule I substance. That means that only a few universities are authorized to do this research, and there's only one legal source in the whole of the United States from which they can obtain cannabis to perform medical research. So there are a number of significant roadblocks that are limiting our ability to understand the effects of medical cannabis. And that was starting to get better under the previous administration, but with Jeff Sessions' phobia of medical marijuana and his desire to crack down on enforcement, it seems like if he is able to follow through, that's going to get worse rather than better over the next period of time that this current administration persists. And that's really bad news for medical cannabis research. I think we need much more rather than less research on these compounds, because they can have a game-changing effect on a number of conditions for which conventional medicine does not have much to offer. And it appears to do that without causing significant side effects and risks in most cases. So, you know, it's crazy to me that we would not be spending more time and energy and money, you know, investigating this as a therapeutic approach. You know, if you're a skeptic, you might wonder if one reason for that is that cannabis is a whole plant and cannot be patented. And, you know, although it's possible to develop drugs based on cannabis compounds that have, you know, unique features that are patentable, cannabis as a whole is not subject to, you know, it can't be patented, and therefore pharmaceutical companies may not be very interested. All of the funding and money that goes into doing this kind of research is not available, because the pharmaceutical companies don't, there's no benefit for them on the other end of that. And so this is just highlights a number of problems we have with our current medical and research system. Anyhow, back to the conditions that have already been identified in the medical literature in terms of a potential benefit from medical cannabis. PTSD is a big one. PTSD is a growing problem. And again, there just are not very many good options for people with PTSD in the conventional medical world. There is a drug that has been created, a cannabinoid drug, for the treatment of anorexia and nausea among cancer and AIDS patients. And that has been associated with a cessation or reduction in the intensity of nightmares in a majority of PTSD patients that were surveyed. And New Mexico is the first state to allow the usage of medical cannabis to treat PTSD. And the one study that they did there revealed a 75% reduction in symptoms among patients with PTSD. Now, you do not see that with any conventional treatment. So this is a pretty remarkable effect. And again, one would think we should be studying this more rather than less. Cancer is another interesting application. You know, I already mentioned that cannabis and then nabilone, the cannabinoid drug, and dronabinol have all been approved for, which is another cannabinoid drug, have all been approved for the treatment of anorexia, cachexia, nausea, and vomiting in cancer patients undergoing chemo. And that's been happening since the 80s. But there's newer research that has suggested an even more exciting use of cannabis for cancer patients, which is that cannabis may actually be able to treat the cancer cells themselves. Cannabinoids induce cell death, inhibit cell growth, and slow metastasis in tumor cells without harming the surrounding non-cancerous cells, which is, of course, the Shangri-La when it comes to successful cancer treatments, is finding something that harms cancer cells but doesn't harm non-cancerous cells. In one mouse model, pure THC and CBD were shown to prime glioma cells, which are cells found in certain type of brain cancer, for radiation therapy, making them more sensitive to the radiation and more effectively treated by it. So There's not enough published research yet on cannabis and cancer. I would love to see more. I can tell you anecdotally that I know of several patients and centers that are using high-dose medical cannabis and have, at least anecdotally, again, these results haven't been published, so we need to take it with a grain of salt, but some patients with stage four inoperable cancers who really had few other options have tried very high-dose cannabis products and have actually reversed their cancer to the point where it wasn't visible on the scan, and they were declared to be cancer-free, you know, at least temporarily by their doctor. And this is the sort of thing that is not supposed to be possible. It defies our current understanding of cancer and cancer treatment. And again, I want to be clear here that those results were not published. We need to take them with a grain of salt. There's a lot of snake oil peddled out there in terms of cancer and things that are promised to treat and reverse cancer and eliminate cancer. And so I think we always have to be careful in evaluating these kinds of claims. But the mechanisms do make sense. There's research to support them. And some of these stories are coming from people that I know and trust. And so it's very interesting to me, especially given the rise in cancer, the fact that it's likely to become the number one cause of death in the next several years, and that the conventional treatments are really lacking at this point. MS is another condition, multiple sclerosis, that's shown to benefit from cannabis. As I mentioned, the studies have found that it can provide relief for multiple symptoms of MS, including spasticity, pain, motor function, and control. In humans with MS, both whole plant cannabis-based medicine and extracts combining THC and CBD have been shown to reduce the number of spastic episodes and pain. And the importance there is that spasticity is one of the most common symptoms of MS, and yet it's one of the ones that's most poorly treated by conventional drugs or treatment options that are available. So that's what makes cannabis exciting for that condition. Finally, epilepsy. We have to talk about that because cannabis has been used for millennia in the treatment of epilepsy. You can see it mentioned in ancient texts, but it's only been recently investigated for safety and efficacy in humans. And in particular, that research is focused on cannabis use for childhood epilepsy that's shown resistance to current treatments. You may know that some of the conventional treatments for epilepsy in kids are brutal, cause brutal side effects, which in some way can be worse than the disease itself. And the results for cannabinoids in animal models of epilepsy have been mixed, but CBD has been associated with a decrease in seizure frequency in a recent human study among participants with childhood onset treatment-resistant epilepsy. And anecdotally, again, I know that several parents and kids, within our CCFM practice and outside, have had some pretty remarkable results with cannabis, CBD, and THC combination products in kids. And that, together with a ketogenic, very low-carb diet, has been an absolute game-changer for some of these kids. They're able to completely get off their medications, the anti-seizure drugs, which can be so brutal for these kids. You know, it restores their appetite. It allows them to function normally in their life. And it's, like I said, can just be an incredible game-changer for not only the kids, but for their whole family. So those are the conditions that have been best studied so far, but there are many, many other therapeutic applications because when you understand the mechanisms, the cannabis can be anti-inflammatory, it can be analgesic, it can be anti-anxiolytic, so it can be anti-anxiety, it can help with depression, it can help with appetite, it can be a miracle for sleep in some cases, patients who have intractable insomnia that doesn't respond to any other treatment, taking cannabis oil or capsules that have a longer half-life, either CBD alone or some combination of CBD and THC, can work where nothing else works. So given that cannabis is anti-inflammatory, and given the fact that most modern disease is inflammatory in origin, then we may surmise that cannabis could have a wide range of therapeutic applications far beyond what we've just talked about in terms of the four main areas. And if the research environment allows this, we're going to see a lot more studies that links cannabis to benefits and other conditions that for which it hasn't yet been studied. So that leads us to the legal and social environment. As many of you know, cannabis has been legalized in some states for medical use and has also been legalized for recreational use in a smaller number of states. Now, federally, cannabis is still classified as a Schedule I drug, and although the stigma has gone down, particularly in those states where it's used medically and now legal recreationally, there's still quite a bit of that on a national basis. And there's this now, especially with the current administration, this growing question of what's going to happen when federal and state laws conflict. You know, federal laws are definitely trump state laws and when it comes to drugs. And there was always the possibility that federal authorities would step in and prosecute people on the state level, despite marijuana being legal on the state level. In the Obama administration, there was an agreement that wasn't going to happen. But now Jeff Sessions is actively working to repeal that agreement so that the federal government can start prosecuting marijuana infractions and, you know, shutting down dispensaries on the state level. The NIH is providing funding to 40 active projects in the category of therapeutic cannabinoid research. And this is good. I'm glad to see this, but we definitely need more research given the promising roles that cannabis has shown in all of the conditions that we've talked about, again, many of which don't have effective treatments available in the conventional medical paradigm. So it's a tricky legal and social environment. If you live in a state like California, as I do, where both medical and recreational marijuana have been legalized, there are a lot of options for using this kind of treatment. And there are some really exciting groups like Constance Therapeutics in San Francisco that are taking almost like a biotech level, pharmaceutical grade approach to medical cannabis. They're controlling the process from seed to application, you know, all organic seed, and they're specializing, cultivating particular strains and ratios and blends for particular conditions. You know, they're doing a lot of testing to determine which strains and which blends work best for which applications. And, you know, they're approaching it in a very serious way and having some pretty incredible results. So that, you know, working with a company like that on therapeutic medical cannabis is very different, of course, from just going down to like a local dispensary that is mostly catering to people who want to use it recreationally and where you don't really know much about the quality of the product or the strains that are, you know, involved, and you don't really get any coaching or support in how to use it, which, you know, a company like Constance Therapeutics provides for all of the people that they work with. And so that's one of the challenges with utilizing this as a therapy, is that it's kind of the Wild West where patients are left to try to figure out, you know, all of these questions on their own when they may not really have the training or expertise or understanding of this space to be able to do that. So still, a lot of people have been able to navigate that, you know, if possible. And if you live in a state where it's legal, I definitely recommend working with a practitioner who is knowledgeable about these different questions and can refer you to a dispensary that has quality control and where you know what you're getting and you know you're getting a high quality product. But even in places where that's not available, the safety of cannabis suggests that if you're able to do some research and find a relatively good product, particularly CBD only products, which are legal and can be purchased over the counter via the internet in all 50 states, I would say it's certainly worth a try if you're dealing with any of these conditions or your kids are. Still a good idea to work with someone who's knowledgeable about, you know, therapeutic use of CBD, but that's readily available to anybody in any state, at least at this point. Again, the current administration might change that. And I hope if any new laws come up or proposals come up to do that, that if you believe in the potential of this approach, that you'll write, you know, or call your congressman, your senator, and express your, you know, your desire to see more research and more of a free flow of ideas and information and laws that support the use of medical cannabis, because I think it's a really important area to focus on in the coming years. All right, just want to say a few brief words about our own experience with this at CCFM, our clinic. We have been increasingly using a wide variety of medical cannabis applications, anything from pure CBD, which again, our patients can just buy over the counter, to using medical cannabis products that require a prescription. And I should have pointed that out earlier, but even in states, at least for now, where cannabis, recreational cannabis is legal, like in California, that hasn't fully settled in yet. So patients who are going to use products that have any THC in them have to get a prescription and a medical marijuana letter from a physician. So in some cases, when we're recommending THC and CBD blends, a practitioner from our clinic will write a prescription, and then we can send them to a place like Constance Therapeutics or other medically minded dispensaries, and they, you know, suggest a particular strain and a particular ratio of THC to CBD, and then a particular dosage based on their conditions. And the things that I've seen it be extremely helpful for, insomnia is probably top of the list. Like I mentioned, it can be a game changer for anxiety in some cases, although I want to at least point out that in a small number of cases, it can have a paradoxical effect and even increase anxiety, especially if someone is not familiar with cannabis and has never used it before. Again, game changer for cancer support, you know, increasing appetite, reducing nausea. I've seen it be very helpful for migraine, for inflammatory bowel disease, and the whole range of autoimmune diseases that are autoimmune and inflammatory. I've seen both CBD and CBD THC products be extremely helpful. Chronic intractable pain. Cannabis products have allowed some patients to get off painkillers that they've been using for many years, which, as I'm sure you know, can cause a lot of adverse effects. Digestive problems like IBS, and particularly diarrhea predominant IBS, can be helped tremendously by medical cannabis products. So those are the main ones that we use it for. There are others, but it's really promising. All of the clinicians at CCFM are excited about it and have seen good results. So it's something definitely worth exploring. Okay, that's it for today. Again, send us your questions at chriscresser.com/podcast question. Thank you, Kristen, for sending this one in. I know a lot of listeners are going to be interested in it. Talk to you soon. That's the end of this episode of Revolution Health Radio. If you appreciate the show and want to help me create a healthier and happier world, please head over to iTunes and leave us a review. They really do make a difference. If you'd like to ask a question for me to answer on a future episode, you can do that at chriscresser.com/podcast question. You can also leave a suggestion for someone you'd like me to interview there. If you're on social media, you can follow me at twitter.com/chriscresser or facebook.com/chriscresserlac. I post a lot of articles and research that I do throughout the week there that never makes it to the blog or podcast, so it's a great way to stay abreast of the latest developments. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you next time.